2 o'clock, and we've got one of our favorites with us, State Senator Tim Neville, ranked A on the Principles of Liberty, which is the only system I trust anymore. All the rest of them, I think, have been tainted. Tim, thanks for joining us.
Glad to join you, Chuck and Julie. How are you guys doing today?
We're
doing great.
We're good. Hey, wanted to talk to you a little bit about, I saw your column in Colorado Politics a couple days ago. And, you know, attacks on free speech aren't just confined to college campuses. Yesterday we had Pam Geller on talking about, you know, how at Berkeley they were refusing to let her and Milo speak. And they let them kind of come but lock the doors, and then they wouldn't let the people in. And you start off with what I think is an interesting point. You wouldn't think you would need legislation to protect the First Amendment on college campuses of all places, but you did, and you did pass some legislation. Why don't you tell us first what that does, and then why? What is happening that is even necessary?
Well, I guess what's happening, like anything else, you have to bring attention to something when basic rights are not being protected, and they haven't been on college campuses for quite a while. And we also saw that it was going to get worse. We saw what was happening, you know, was able to see what was happening out in places like Berkeley and other colleges, and realized that there had to be some things happening in Colorado. And when we delved into it a little bit more, we started hearing stories about people that were being disenfranchised, or barriers that were being put up that were not reasonable barriers to or reasonable reasons for inciting or basically eliminating free speech.
Like, can you tell us about some of them?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when someone says something very simple, like if you're going to do a registration on campus, a voter registration, and then someone comes along and says, well, you're in a public space, that's not a problem, but you have to, you know, file for a permit, and we'll let you know in 2 weeks.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds like...
We'll let you know after the registration period ends.
I was in Mexico one time when we parked the car working on a story, and the guy's like, you have to pay the parking the car fee. Mm-hmm. And we're like, what? And we had to pay the getting out the tripod fee, you know? God, okay.
I mean, it's, sometimes they just see you coming. But I think what happens a lot on college campuses is just that administrations run scared, and they have to realize that they have a responsibility to promote free speech, and it can't be. The other thing that frustrated the heck out of me were these free speech zones. We call them quarantine zones,
right.
First Amendment quarantine zones.
Right.
You know, the idea that, yeah, you can have free speech if it's in this little zone, probably where no one can hear you,
right,
away from everyone else. And it sounds sort of like what you were saying is happening with Milo and, you know, that instance in Berkeley. I mean, yeah, they'll put you in a little cage and, hey, we'll have the free speech people right here. And
well, that's really what they did in the Democratic National Convention, because they wanted to.
Yeah, they had the pen for the protesters.
Here you go. Here's a nice pen for you. And everybody was thrilled about that. I wasn't so thrilled.
I covered that, too, and none of the protesters went there. Well, what about, let me ask you, so what does your legislature, it was a bipartisan.
I can't believe that.
Well, which is good. Democrats.
What Democrats? They don't believe in free speech.
What does it do?
They don't. I mean, there's a few Alan Dershowitzes in the world, but by and large, they believe free speech is whatever is left-wing speech, and anything other than that is hate speech. And whatever Tim Neville has to say is clearly hate speech.
Well, not that, you know, it was kind of interesting. I think the biggest bridge we had to, you know, to cross was the fact that when we had our first committee hearing, and I sat down and I looked at the Democrats on the education committee that I serve with, and said, my closing argument, you know, this isn't about me. This is about free speech. And I want you to think about, I want you to think about, no matter what my political views might be, I want you to imagine a world that might be drastically changed in another 8 years or 16 years. Let's say if the people that you feel you don't agree with are in charge, and what if they came down and said, that we're going to limit free speech. So it's one of those things you have to understand. You can't just go by where you're at right now. You have to take the long-term view. And we've taken that with free speech, and it's worked pretty good for us for several hundred years. And so why would we not make sure that we empower that more and take care of some of these issues that we're seeing on free speech campuses,
If you really study it, studying free speech and how it's violated, and the famous saying "you can't yell fire in a theater." That comes from a case in which somebody just said, "I oppose the draft," And they arrested him and jailed him. Oh. To oppose World War One, you came under the Sedition Acts of 1918.
The Alien Sedition Act, yeah.
Well, and the 1898 was the famous one of Adams. So if you think that we've had 200 years of free speech, we've had to constantly fight for it and refight for it and refight for it, and we're refighting for it again.
Well, it's always the case. And, you know, it's unfortunate that we have to, but when you take a look at this, you know, what people are attempting to do, the other thing, that I think the tough thing is that we look at the polls and we realize that many millennials believe they're willing to give away, you know, basically their free speech rights. And it's sort of frustrating when you think many of these universities were the birthplace of possibly radical free speech in the 60s and 70s, and now they've become, you know, the major oppressors of free speech currently.
What I like the one where they said shockingly, millennials would give up their voting rights for 2 years in return for getting rid of their student debt. And, and you kind of go, are you kidding me? You could go up to about, I tell you what, if you won't vote for the next 2 years, I'll give you $100,000. You know, you're going to get like 99% participation on that. It's just not millennials. Ye God. I mean, people bought votes with beers before. Forget about, you know.
In Chicago, they did it with garbage cans.
Yeah, garbage cans for six figures, get rid of your vote. Ye God. Who are they kidding?
Well, that means we're talking to Senator Tim Neville, who had passed some bipartisan legislation regarding protecting free speech. Do you, at the end of your column, though, you talk about the Southern Poverty Law Center and the thing that we're probably not done here. And let me ask you about that. If you don't want to comment on this, I know, because I'm kind of hitting you off, you know, maybe off guard what do you think about I know you're like hit me what do you think about Colorado Springs Mayor John Suthers and what he did with that VDARE group and whatever group it was, where he just said, and it was kind of vague is what he meant by
withdraw all city services.
What do you think about something like that?
Well, he takes an oath to uphold the Constitution. So
No. John
Suthers shouldn't be violating his oath.
No, John Suthers.
You'd think he'd know about that as a former Attorney General.
No, he didn't take that one. He skipped that day.
No.
He was the former Attorney General. You're exactly right, Julie. And, he has the responsibility to provide law and order and protect. And I think he's even, passed a few taxes to supposedly help him do that down
fees.
There.
Fees. No, they're not taxes. They're fees. They're just simply fees.
Excuse me, whatever.
Yeah. Sewer. We've had that on the show.
The Supreme Court.
Yeah,
that's right.
Right. Well, and getting to that, which is interesting. Now, the governor has called a special session, which I guess will start next week, to fix a quote-unquote typo, and it's doing two things. Was it really a typo? Did it really go to debt reduction, which we know is...
We're talking about the hospital provider fee.
Sure.
And it's gone up. It's also brought another thing, and it has caused at least portions of the grassroots Republican Party just livid about the betrayal of Grantham, Jerry Sondberg, and I understand there's a special award is being given out now. They're getting together for the dinner. They call it the John Kerry. I voted for it before I voted against it in order to give Owen Hill his special John Kerry statue. People are outraged what the Republican Party did in the last second, sleazily in the dark of night, and now it's being brought up to everybody of how much the Republicans at the legislature sold them down the drain. Forget about 7.5 years of saying, golly gee, repeal and replace. Oh, we didn't mean that. Oh, we love Tabor. We love Smaller. Oh, forget about that. We just got one by and we called it rural hospital help. Do any of the legislatures feel the hatred some people are feeling for them?
Well, no, we just feel love. I mean, it's only just pure, unadulterated love that we feel all the time.
I knew it. Chuck just
expressed there.
Yeah. No. Here's what I can tell you. There was a tremendous amount of frustration around Senate Bill 267.
Right.
I know I voiced my frustration. I felt it was unconstitutional in so many different ways.
Sure.
It was bad policy, violated the single subject, the $600 million versus $200 million reset on taxpayer bill of rights. It was bad in so many ways. And it passed. And now all of a sudden, of course, what goes wrong when you do a 70-page strike below in the dead of night, and then the next day you try to rush it through the Appropriations Committee and onto the floor to pass it in the last 3 days? What could go wrong, right?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
many things
nothing.
Go wrong.
Not a thing.
Yeah.
Not a thing.
So
I think that the governor's call, you know, as I, you know, somebody asked me what I thought about it, and I said, well, the governor, you know, has the constitutional right to call a special session. You would think he would do it for something that is extremely important to all Coloradans.
Right.
And so I want you to just remember, this started out as the Rural Sustainability Bill. So I'm trying to figure out why you call a special session for the Scientific Cultural Facility District, which is a very small amount, but the other big one is RTD, Regional Transportation District. You know, I'm not sure how that relates to rural Colorado and making, you know, helping rural Colorado sustain itself. It's more like, as I called it, the governor calling a special session to make Colorado safe for more government.
Well, is he doing that? We're talking with Senator Tim Neville, Colorado legislator. Is he doing this, do you think, to maybe
because he hates Jerry Sonnenberg?
Yeah,
he wants to just expose Jerry Sonnenberg. So if everybody didn't hate Jerry Sonnenberg before, they've now learned to hate Jerry Sonnenberg.
I mean, is he playing politics here? I know that'd be shocking, but...
Well, I believe that the governor and his staff are always playing politics, or almost always. I mean, I think there are times when they realize that politics is the way politics is played is beneficial if they do something that may be positive. But in this case, I think it's purely politics. Where was the governor all these months when we realized that there was an issue with this bill and the funding? That was found out in the end of May. Where was he?
Busy.
He was gone.
He was drafting the health care bill.
That's right. And his beloved non-interested in political aspirations, Lieutenant Governor Donna Lynn, who is running for governor. She's from Kaiser Permanente.
But now to come back and ask us to come back and violate the Constitution once again. Because when I read I think it's Article 10, Section 20 of the Constitution, it states basically that if you have to pass a tax, or if you're going to start collecting a tax, or it has to be approved by the people of Colorado. It doesn't matter if it was a mistake made by bureaucrats in the dead of night trying to push something through, but that tax is not being collected currently. It's not being collected, so it's a new collection of a tax.
Right.
And the way I read that is it would require a referendum to the voters of Colorado to be passed. And so that's what I see. And I don't think the legislature has the power to to wave its magic wand, and unless it's violating the Constitution again. And I don't want any part of that.
Well, will that come up in the special session then? I mean, is this going to be sort of a rubber stamp thing, or is this a chance, at least for people like you? To fight to put a stop to this before it starts.
Well, everybody has a vote, and there's 100 of us, and
right.
So trying to understand what everyone is going to do. But I do believe that I've talked to many people, and I have not heard anybody that has an appetite in the Republican Party for a special session and to violate the Constitution one more time.
Well, so he'd call the session. Do you have to go through committees,
yep.
Or can you just have a vote of the assemblies separately, or can you just
just not show up?
Yeah, I just because we watched the Texas special
right.
session. They had to go through the committees and then down to the floor. They had to go through the whole legislative process. Does that apply here, or the rules don't apply?
It does.
Okay.
It does. So someone will probably present a bill, mm-hmm. or multiple bills based upon the call. And, of course, that's varying opinions of what that call actually covers. And then we'll go through the process just like we do anywhere. If they start in the Senate, then they have to go to the House to the Senate. We'll see where those bills go.
Can they bring up other stuff?
Yeah, are they limited by the call by the governor?
They are limited by the call.
Is Owen Hill going to get a chance to vote for it before he votes against it again?
I don't know, Chuck. You'll have to ask Owen,
okay.
what's okay. up with that. But, you know, I kind of look at it like this. I hope that, you know, it's a new day and, you know, you serve with all your friends and I'm sure they think that I'm on the wrong side of things occasionally. Uh-huh. But,
never.
You know, when you give the right, I appreciate it. But when you give the, when you're given the opportunity for another vote, just, you know, do the best you can and let's go from here. But, you know, again, I don't think that, I think the governor is wasting a lot of the taxpayers' time and money.
Well, it's
amazing. Particularly because they go back in session in January, right?
That's correct.
Well, let me ask you about another one. We covered it in our newspaper. They've covered here in 710 KNUS, but it hasn't been covered by the government-controlled Denver Post or the government-controlled channels on 4, 7, and 9. The amazing deal where the governor has taken taxpayer money to hand out to the Brownstein firm, $17.5 a month, in order for them to, quote-unquote, lobby.
For his health care bill.
For his health care bill, he came with Kasich, as well as some vague things about national service. Is it really that bad? Is it just a huge slush fund that you all control down there, you can throw to Norm Brownstein and his minions?
Well, I haven't gotten into that to take a look at that fund. So I'll have to, you know, do some boning up on that, Chuck. But when it comes to, you know, to the entire budget, you know, people wonder why we don't have the money. And then they talk about, you know, tax increases to take care of things like roads. It's not a question of not having funds and not having money coming in to the state government. It's a question of basically having politicians that won't prioritize and actually, you know, provide some stewardship to, you know, to basically fund the right things.
But is it okay for the governor is it okay for the governor just to give $17,500 a month to Norm Brownstein because he's sort of locked to, and apparently Doug Friedash, former partner of Norm Brownstein, was big and hot on it, you know. Shove the Brownstein some money, buddy.
Well, it's a lot. Are you familiar with what we're talking about? David Sirota did a story in International Business Times.
Yes.
Where he talked about...
I hadn't read the article yet, no.
Okay.
Well, you should read it.
What it says is that what he revealed through chasing a campaign contribution. So the Brownstein law firm, which contributed heavily to get Hickenlooper elected in the first place, is also a big lobbyist for the healthcare industry.
Right.
Coincidentally, they get Hickenlooper to sponsor this healthcare thing that he and Kasich are proposing. In the meantime, the governor's office is paying Brownstein
$17.5
a month to promote the health care bill that they gave him to promote in the first place. And it's like, what?
So he's on a retainer to represent the governor. Is that
represent the state of Colorado.
State of Colorado and Washington, D.C.
Pushing for this legislation.
Sure. I mean, it just seems so corrupt and dishonest. It seems so much of a payoff to okay, yes, you raised money for my gubernatorial run. Now I'll hand you $17.5 a month,
to lobby for a proposal that you gave me in the first place and already are lobbying for the healthcare industry. It's like they spent like $70,000 a month. And I go back to
total
since March. It's like I'm sure you guys in the legislature could find something else to do with the $17.5 a month that actually might benefit people besides lobbyists.
Well, agreed. And I think that's one of the things I love about serving on the Legislative Audit Committee. We often have an opportunity to get into that, so that may be something that we need to take a look at. Just a thought there.
Yeah. All right.
You know, because it's like anything else. You know, people say, well, this is legal. Well, it's not a question of everything being legal. It's a question of it being, you know, being proper stewardship of every dollar.
I'm not sure it's even legal.
Yeah, I would.
You know, but our crack attorney general spends all of her time getting a divorce and figuring out who not to sue, so we don't need to worry about her getting on the deal. Let me ask you one other question.
Then we'll let you go.
One more question. What do you think about this wonderful deal where the Republican Party said, no, 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 we must bend to the will of the people and Kent Theory. Oh, no, we don't want to have our own primaries. No, no, no. We want primaries in which we have squishes elected. I mean, they didn't even have the guts. They didn't even have the guts to sue, saying 75. You can't impose supermajorities.
You're talking about the special election Saturday.
Yeah, special election Saturday. That was a exercise in cowardice. And every elected official they talked to, now of course it's the Denver Post, So, no. I think we ought to have this open money pit primary where no real conservative will ever get elected.
So, what do you think?
Not to editorialize my questions.
He's for it. No,
no, that's good. I went down on Saturday, and it was interesting because I had another event. We didn't know that what day and time they were going to call the executive committee. Yeah. So I had a commitment at the state capitol with the Pillars Fund and the Pillar Project, and from a priority standpoint, I try to go with that. But I had my went down there, and if they were going to make the call when I was going to be there, and actually call the subject, people had asked me how I was going to vote, and I said, well, I'm going to vote consistently where I was when we saw these similar proposals come through the state legislature, and I voted no.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Republicans should choose Republicans, and Democrats should choose Democrats.
There you go.
And it's very easy for people to change parties.
Right.
You know, even at the last moment. So it just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. A lot of people were trying to spin it different ways, but that's what I came down to. And yeah, the other thing too, Chuck and Julie, when you take a look at primary states, the more you put cost into, now it really comes down to, do you have to then basically almost run two general elections to get elected to office?
Yeah,
because what's going to happen is you're going to sit at home, and if you're smart, of course, you're going to unregister from the Republican Party, because then you get, and the Democratic Party for that matter, because then you get two ballots, and you kind of go, would I rather screw around with the Democrats this time and vote, you know, screw them up, or would like to vote for who I want, the Republican one? Everybody's going to deregister. They're going to deregister because that's so much more fun to do. And I don't think the long-term things that sleazy Ken Theory has imposed upon us are just beginning. But I'm not, I'm neutral. I'm neutral.
You're opinionated. You don't have a strong opinion on it. No, I think the funny thing though is that sometimes these people that have these manipulations, they're sometimes surprised by the outcome. So on this, I'm not quite sure what the outcome is going to be.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Unintended consequences.
Senator, it's always great to talk to you. You're one of my heroes.
Thank you very much.
You guys too. Hey, I appreciate it. Keep the faith.
All right. Our thanks to Senator Tim Neville. We're going to open it up to the phones. Your thoughts on